This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. A lot of novels try to be like Hollywood movies these days, driven by high concept premises and plots filled with obsession, violence, magic, special effects, spectacle. But not so much Alice MacDermott's novels. She writes very realistically about very ordinary people living very ordinary lives, but she conjures characters and families and places with such fierce conviction and exquisite detail that you come away from her books feeling, A, you know these folks better than you know most flesh and blood humans in your life, and B, reminded that ordinary people possess extraordinary dimension and depth a lot of the time. Her new novel, The First in 7 Years, is called Someone, and Alice MacDermott joins me now. Welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you so much.
So this book feels like, among other things, a celebration of a certain kind of woman who would never be noticed in life otherwise. And the title alone, Someone, seems like a declaration of that. Was that the intention?
Yes, to a large extent it was. She's the sort of character who not a lot of attention gets paid.
Unless she kills herself or somebody else, she's not going to get attention.
Right, or if she's a terrible mother.
Yeah.
But she'll still be a minor character.
Yes. Is part of your intention also to get readers to notice things along with her?
Well, she is definitely the eyes of the novel. She is the eye of the first-person narration, and she is the eyes of the novel in that her myopia is sort of an extended way, a metaphor as a way of looking at the world.
Which is entirely plausible. It's not one of these characters who has the observational commentary ability of, say, a novelist implausible.
Right.
I wonder if you could read a passage from the book. Page 51.
51,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so what's going on right now?
This is Marie is now more or less in middle age. She's left Brooklyn. She's out on Long Island raising her family, but her brother and her mother have stayed in the old house, and Brooklyn is in decline. And the mother now is in literal physical decline, dying. She wakes up on occasion and fearfully asks if she's at home, meaning Ireland, and that's not where she wants to be. So her children, Gabe, Marie's brother, and Marie are trying to reassure her. I went ahead to pull the first door open and then slipped around them to get the outer door as well. There was a blast of heat. Gabe carried my mother into the sunlight and down the steps. There were kids on the stoop across the street. There was the tinny music from their transistor radios. They glared, open-mouthed. A pair of dark men passing by looked up as Gabe came down the stairs with my mother in his arms. They walked to the curb, glancing over their shoulders, giving him wide berth. Gabe, too, went to the curb and then turned around to look back up at the house. I rushed to scoop up the sheet and the blanket that was now brushing the sidewalk. "You're here, Mama," I heard him say, "where we've always lived." My mother raised her head. She extricated one thin hand from the winding bedclothes and raised it to her eyes against the sun. She looked down the street and then up at our building, the blue summer light reflecting in the glass of the front door, the bowed parlor window, some plywood there too, and then up to the fourth floor, where a bit of lace curtain, her handiwork, had been drawn through the opened window. "Not home," I heard Gabe telling her, reassuring her, "Brooklyn."
That was Alice MacDermott reading from her new novel, Someone. And I love that passage partly because it seems to me, if we were going to make a trailer for this novel, it would be it, because it's so much about this particular place and that, you know, sort of seeing is believing beyond any fantasy or wishfulness.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the place transforming itself even as they're living there.
You mentioned before your contrariness, and you mentioned a lot that you're a contrarian and you're stubborn. What does that, beyond writing a novel about this ordinary, apparently uninteresting woman, for instance, what other kinds of decisions does that stubborn contrarianism drive in you?
Well, I suppose my immediate thought about that is the spiritual aspect, if I can say spiritual aspect, of the novel. And the sense for me, the once I understood the story and the novel was essentially composing itself to some in some degree, I realized that really what this was about was, as a child, Marie questions sort of offhandedly her pious brother reciting Matthew to his families about
her priest-to-be.
Her priest-to-be brother, that all the hairs on our heads are counted and two sparrows are sold for small coin and we are more valued than many sparrows. She calls him a fool. She calls him the Irish word for fool, which she had just picked up out on the street, Amadon. And the more I saw that, that's exactly what this novel is about. Do we believe that? Does anyone believe that, that all the hairs on our heads are counted? Every ordinary one of us, that our lives in some way have a shape that is in some ways not necessarily inevitable, but someone's watching out for us.
Only authors are. Only in fiction are they, maybe.
Well, that may be. And if it's only in fiction, well, then it's a good question. Why? What is the fictional impulse to make order? Where does that come from?
From being God.
There you go.
Well, you've said in an interview that recognizing the things that make literature a work of art have made me a Christian in a way that being raised a Catholic never did. Is this what you're talking about?
I think that's very much it. Yeah, I think that's and so as a writer and not feeling that you're playing God with your characters, but that you are some way actually putting yourself at the service of the story rather than creating and manipulating the story to see what happens. And in this book, it was a surprise to me. I wasn't sure which side the book was going to come down, the pious priest who says we are all more valuable than sparrows, or Marie who says that's nonsense. Look, we're dying all the time and nobody's paying any attention.
And is that your approach as a writer in general to not know for certain what you think of these characters or their predicament at the beginning, but discover it?
I'm very careful, I hope, to avoid that. I don't really have a point to make if I want to convince somebody of something.
Send a telegram.
I'll send a telegram, right? Or write a blog.
Or back in the day, this day, you would have sent a telegram. This book, obviously, is about a family. You write a lot about families. What did yours think of their girl deciding to become a writer? And I say girl because that obviously had meaning in 1970, whatever.
Exactly, exactly. Yes, they were very worried about the very notion of such a thing. And in some ways, I'm of that generation of parents as soon as our children show any interest at all in anything, we sign them up for classes and begin to promote their careers. And it was quite opposite for my generation of children. So when I, even in college, made any kind of noise about maybe this was something I wanted to do, my parents, with all good intentions, said, you know, if you go to Katie Gibbs, which is a secretarial school, and learn to take dictation and get your typing skills up, you could work for a publishing house. And then at night, when you came home, you could write your little stories.
And dictation and typing would have been so useful these days.
Exactly right. Yeah.
And you write short stories as well. Do short stories sometimes sort of their own volition bloom into novels?
Yeah, I haven't had that happen. I've had things that I've started not quite sure what they would be and then realized that they were a novel or a short novel.
Uh-huh.
I'm not at first a short story writer. I always think if I were really, really, if I were a really, really wonderful writer, I'd be a poet. If I were a really wonderful writer, I'd be a short story writer. And I'm not quite up there yet, so I need a novel.
But you're not a long novel writer. Have you ever thought, I should write a really long novel, or I should write a novel starring Moors in medieval Spain? Or
oh,
something.
I think that all the time.
Yeah?
Yes, yeah, and sometimes, certainly, when friends and strangers came up to me on the street and say, "Oh, you're writing another novel? Is this another one about Irish Americans where somebody dies?" But you do what you can, you know. What your material is what your material is. And I'm not terribly interested, actually, in Irish Americans in New York or anywhere else in the 20th century.
Really? You could fool us.
I know. I'm glad that other people are. But I'm interested in what it is to be human, to make it through a life. To think that you're a fool to believe that someone's watching over this and there's any shape to our lives, or to be someone who believes there is. The rest is just details.
Alice MacDermott, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alice McDermott is the author of seven novels, the latest of which is Someone, and it's out now.